The Five Secrets of a Phenomenal Business, Chapter 9, Part 2.
All right, let's talk about how to find, how to attract phenomenal dream team members, all right? What kind of person are you looking for in a team member? In my seminars, I ask small business owners what they're looking for, and typically, here's what the list looks like. They're looking for someone who's successful, someone who's done well in the past, someone with a good work ethic, who isn't lazy, someone with a positive attitude that has a pleasing personality that's enthusiastic, someone who has a great appearance that dresses well and grooms themselves well, someone who's intelligent that is smart and can figure things out, someone who's honest and trustworthy that you can trust to do right by others, someone that's loyal, who isn't there just for the money, but believes in your vision and your values. Someone who takes initiative, who doesn't have to be told what to do every time. You're looking for someone who's organized, who keeps track of their things and their responsibilities. They're not absent-minded. You're looking for a leader who will influence others positively. See, this is what people tell me that they're looking for. This is what small business owners say that they're looking for. Wow, we aren't asking for much, are we? I mean, in today's values challenge world, I'm being nice. This is like finding a needle in a haystack. Or is it? What kind of person are they looking for as an employer? Actually, the same list. They want to work with someone and for someone who's successful. Successful people want to associate with successful people. So if you want to attract the right kind of people, the very best team members, then you're looking for successful people. Well, they want to be associated with someone successful. They want someone with a good work ethic. They don't want to work for some lazy person. They're looking for someone with a positive attitude. Who wants to work for someone who has a negative attitude? They want to work for someone who has a great appearance, someone who's well-groomed, doesn't like to be associated with a sloppy leader. They're looking for someone intelligent. What smart person wants to work for a dumb person? They're looking for someone who's honest and trustworthy. Who wants to work for someone that they don't trust? They're looking for someone who's loyal. Who wants to work for someone who might dump them at the drop of a hat? They want to work for someone who takes initiative. Who wants to work for somebody who doesn't know how to lead? They're looking for someone who is organized. Organized people like organized people. They're looking for a leader. If you're looking for a leader, leaders don't want to work for someone who doesn't have leadership skills. This is why it's so important to develop yourself as a leader so that you can attract leaders. So have you noticed a pattern here? You attract who you are, not who you want. And if you attract who you want and you're not living up to that, they're not going to stay very long. This is why it's so important for you to become a different, better person. If you're going to attract phenomenal people, you have to be a phenomenal person. The phenomenally successful person builds the phenomenally successful business. Successful people don't want to work for someone who doesn't have a clear vision. They don't want to be on a mediocre mission. They desperately want to have meaning in their lives. What is your reputation as a business owner? How do you rate in these areas? And by the way, do you need full-time, part-time, or could you outsource some of the duties in your company? I mean, do you really need a full-time employee? I've found that a number of tasks on the implementation level of the organizational chart can be done by part-timers. For example, I have part-time people who make outgoing calls, who visit referral sources, who perform data entry, and depending on the type of business, you might even consider using a virtual assistant. I have people who work remotely and do online stuff. They do things on the computer. They take phone calls. They make phone calls. You can outsource a number of things in your business. As I mentioned previously, one of the most helpful things to understand as a leader is the DISC model of human behavior. It's been very helpful to me in getting my staff to communicate with one another effectively. I often say that all of business and all of life is about relationships. Relying on ads to attract strangers is not the most phenomenal way to get new team members. As a small business owner, the most valuable skill you can develop is your ability to build a network of relationships. Let me say that again. As a small business owner, the most valuable skill you can develop is your ability to build a network of relationships, because all of business and all of life is about relationships. And I'm not talking about relationships just with prospects, but I'm talking about people in all areas of the community. Remember that recruiting team members is a marketing process. When you're recruiting team members, you want to use the same processes you learned in the phenomenal marketing systems. You must position yourself in the community as the preferred employer by the way that you interact in the community. The way you do that is by always looking professional, acting professional, being positive, enthusiastic, and adding value to people, helping people. When people ask you how you're doing, you say, phenomenal. And they're going to wonder what you're smoking when you're always positive. But I'm telling you, it's amazing how well it works. And then you can ask them if they know that they're phenomenal, and you can tell them why they are phenomenal. All right? It's strange to me that people notice what I consider to be small things. For example, on the voicemail for my cell phone, I close by saying, have a phenomenal day, in a very enthusiastic voice. You won't believe how many comments I get from that small thing. Well, and of course, when people ask me how I'm doing, what do you think I say? Well, phenomenal, of course. When you ask most people how they're doing, they say, good, right? Well, that wasn't enough for Zig Ziglar. Zig Ziglar always answered, when you ask him how he was doing, he said, better than good, but improving. This is the kind of positive attitude you want to have to attract the right people. You want to attract positive people, not negative people. Don't tell the people in the community about your problems or complain about the economy. And above all, never, ever complain about your work or your clients, because when you do that, you're going to repel the right people, and if you attract anybody, you're going to attract miserable people. I'll just go ahead and say this. If you hire the wrong person, it doesn't matter what you do. No matter what kind of leadership systems you have, you've already failed as a leader. It's not going to work. Hiring the right people is the first step, but then you have to practice good leadership to keep them. You have to practice good systems so that they have a track to operate on, and you have to continue to do those things day in and day out. When you display a positive attitude, you're going to attract people who want to be positive. When I was writing this book, I came across a journal from several years ago. We were having problems with my son, and I was in the midst of firing my bookkeeper. We had cash flow problems. I was tired and traveling too much, and my success at that time was hit and miss on the road, and I was frustrated. But I continued to trust in God, and I continued to display a positive attitude. Hope for the future will help you have the right attitude. You can have tremendous problems, but still display a positive attitude. It helps you because it keeps you from going into despair, which then causes you to make irrational decisions. You've got to keep your head and your heart about you. Display a positive attitude even in the midst of tremendous problems. When you see people you think might be a good team member for your company, talk to them about it, even if you don't need anyone yet. You don't wait until you need a customer to start marketing, right? I hope not. Hopefully, you're always marketing to keep your funnel full. The same is true in marketing for team members. Always be building relationships with people and attracting people so that you'll have a number of people to choose from when the time comes. Now, this book was written several years ago, but I'm telling you right now today, I just hired someone last week that I met 4 years ago that I have just stayed in touch with, added value, and encouraged. And when I asked this person to come to work for me, or if they would interview with me, the response was, I would love to. Thank you for asking me. Kenny Pelletier is one of the inside sales reps that's been with us at my service company for almost 2 decades. I knew Kenny from church, and every time there was a church function, I'd talk to Kenny. He loved his job as a disc jockey at a Christian radio station, but they didn't pay him enough. How things going with you and your company? He would ask. Phenomenal, of course, I would say. Hey, Kenny, you should join the team. That's what I would tell him. Now, at that time, I didn't have an opening for Kenny, but I knew 2 things. One, it would take Kenny a while to make a decision, and by that time, I knew that something would probably open up because we were growing. The second thing that I knew is that anything could happen the next day. You need to recruit before you need someone. Just tell people, hey, one of these days, I'd love to have you on my team. I don't have anything right now, but let's stay in touch so that when I need someone, if you would like to come on and be on my team, you know, we can make that happen. Kenny's daughter, Elise, started working with us when she was 18. She was a phenomenal team member that filled many roles with excellence. She referred her then-boyfriend, now-husband, Santiago. How was I to know that this skinny, long-haired 17-year-old kid would become such a gift to me? How was I to know that this young man would be one of the most talented, positive, gifted, and loyal employees ever? How did I know he would become a little Howard as he teaches my programs at Phenomenal Products just as I would? How was I to know that I would get Johan at 19 years old? He's now 31. He runs the operations of my company. Or Aliki when she was 21, and now at 26, she's the marketing director of my service company. I didn't. But what I did and what I do know is that all of business is about relationships. This is one of the reasons I hire family members. Conventional wisdom says don't hire family, and it's because they don't understand how to be real and upfront about the business relationship. You got to be upfront that the business relationship is separate from the personal relationship. They have to be okay with the decision if I have to let a family member go, even if they don't agree with it. Yes, there is a downside to hiring family. When they go on vacation, they generally go together. When there is a birth, sickness, or death, there goes the whole family. But think about this. Because you're close to the family, these are times that can be the most meaningful to them when you're there to support them. I've had situations where I've had to fire 2 family members on the same day. It was hard, but justified. I've also had a difficult situation where I had to severely discipline a family member, and I couldn't discuss the situation with the other family members because they aren't in management. With all of that said, I still believe the positives far outweigh the negatives. Jim Bardwell was my special referral marketing agent who helped me implement my referral marketing systems. He was with me for 8 years and did practically everything in my company before taking up that role. I first met Jim at an industry networking group, and my positive attitude is what attracted him to me. His words were, "Whatever that man has, I want." By the way, this was the same group of negative guys who laughed at me and said, "Who do you think you are, Zig Ziglar or somebody?" Of course, Jim was the only positive guy in the group, and he and I really hit it off. He and his wife invited me out for dinner, and he asked me for a job. He was working for a competitor, and I told him I'd have to call the owner and ask for permission. And secondly, I didn't have a position that was available right now. He told me he was leaving the other company regardless, and as fate would have it, I had to fire a guy the very next morning. Jim came on board and not only helped me take my company to the next level, he also became one of my best friends in the entire world. He's been one of my biggest cheerleaders. At lunch one day, after being laughed at by those other guys, he looked across the table and he said to me, "I do see you as the Zig Ziglar of our industry." A tear rolled down my cheek because little did Jim know that what I'm doing now was a hidden dream of mine at the time. Jim moved on to work with one of my Phenomenal Products clients, and then he moved on to another company. And we just got to the point where even though it wasn't in both of our best interests to continue to work together, we're still best friends. How's that possible? Well, it's possible because we had a strong relationship. This is why it's worth building a phenomenal team, because some of your best friends in the whole world will come out of that. I briefly mentioned Scott and Dennis earlier. Scott came on board as a partner way back in 1997. I'd met him at an industry function too. We played golf together once in a while. Well, I should say that Scott played golf. I finally realized that whatever I was doing out there on the golf course was not actually playing golf. It was more like the ball was playing hide and seek with me. As we tooled around the golf course, we talked about the ultimate service company and what it would look like. We took on another partner as well, Dennis, who was also a colleague and some of the groups that we were in where I networked. And the three of us had a great 8-year run in many ways as partners, although we made a ton of mistakes and built up a lot of debt. But finally, Scott bailed out, and soon after, Dennis and I collided, as I mentioned earlier. And Dennis went on to do his training, which is what he loves. And after a stint with working with one of our vendors, Scott came back to work with me and now manages my administration department for all my companies. But what you need to notice is that all of these people came from networking, building relationships. I'll say it again. Your most valuable skill as a business owner is the ability to build a large network of phenomenal relationships. All of business and all of life is about relationships. My first employee was with me almost 20 years. My second employee has been with me off and on for over 30 years. The only reason my first employee didn't stay with me was because of a lack of phenomenal leadership systems. We went through some periods when I was absent and the management team I had in place just wasn't getting the job done. When you think about the phenomenal marketing systems for clients that you learned earlier in this book, think about it also in the terms of attracting and acquiring the best employees. Earlier, you learned about positioning yourself as the only obvious choice for your niche market. You must position yourself as the obvious choice as an employer. You learned about referral marketing, building your network, and offering a reward, by the way, for a new employee works very well. Direct advertising and internet advertising would personally be my last choice for finding a potential team member because I want to know someone who actually knows that person. My operations manager at Phenomenal Products, Michelle, worked at a retail store that was closing, and my wife happened to frequent that store. My wife referred the manager of the store to me, who was not the right fit. But in the interview process, and as we discovered that we weren't the right fit for each other, he said, "Oh, you have to interview Michelle. She would be perfect for this job." Now, when someone refers a person who works underneath them that highly, pay attention. One of the most frequent asked questions that I get as a business coach is, how do I pay my people so they'll perform? The answer, you don't. Studies have revealed that employees rate their pay behind four other more important factors, such as one, we've already mentioned, how they're treated. Number two, whether they feel in on things. Number three, benefits. And number four, work environment. They may not verbalize this and may not even be aware of it, but the fact remains that people stay with you because they feel that they belong and you're adding value to them. Of course, you do have to pay them well, and if you don't handle this part right, you can have serious problems. Many conflicts seem to arise over money-related issues, but my contention is that the conflict is actually due to a lack of communication. Be very clear and upfront with your employees about pay issues. How you pay is just as important as how much you pay. If you have the right person in place who is on board with the vision and the values, you can pay many different ways and still get the right results. Some positions require more incentive or performance-based pay to increase production. We have a whole system in our inner circle on this, but let me give you some pointers in this book. Number one, determine how much the position is worth. You do this by referring to your 12-month cash flow budget that we talked about earlier to determine how much you're going to invest in that position. Number two, determine what impact the position can have on profits. Can this position upsell? Can it affect gross profits? Can it make or cost a sale? Does this position generate income? Number three, break it down. I prefer to pay an hourly base and give bonuses on extraordinary performance for production workers. I brought on a director a couple of years ago and probably paid this person more than I paid an entry-level director before, but this person helped me triple our referral sales that came from referral sources. Aliki was only 26. She was working as a part-time marketing rep for me for about 2 years. She left to go to the corporate world. Cost me a lot to get her back, but it was worth it because I got a huge return on that investment. My good friend Ellen Rohr suggests this. If they bring it in on time and on budget, they get to stay. If they bring it in early and under budget, share the gain with them. If they bring it in not on time and over budget, we'll coach them for a little while. This creates a game that's fun to play. Keep the team informed of the score, work together to create strategies. In my service company, for example, we post the sales numbers every day. They celebrate successes and rally at the last minute if we're behind to pull it out. We offer a number of bonuses to foster that activity, but it's all in the budget. We do events at Phenomenal Products, and the staff works really hard and really long. I always share some extra dough with them for that. They work hard at every event. Anyway, but this ensures that they're watching the numbers as closely as I am. Right now, we have a trip to Hawaii on the table. There's pictures of Hawaii everywhere in our office. When we make our profit goal this year, I'm taking the whole team to Hawaii. So the bottom line of pay systems is to treat them right, recognize them, give them benefits, create a positive working environment, and pay them well on top of that, and you'll be on your way to phenomenal leadership. Before interviewing someone, have the person fill out an application. You can get an employment application from a variety of sources for your state, but you want to have a system for this that doesn't require you to be involved. Since hiring someone is a sales process, I don't like to break the connection. If this person is desirable and they come in to apply, you know, other people are going to be after that person as well. So you need to act quickly on the application and interview process. Now, go slowly from there. This is sort of setting the hook, so to speak. Once you bait the hook, don't jerk too quickly or you'll yank the bait out of the mouth of the fish and you'll bring in the wrong fish or you'll damage the good fish. I have a simple application procedure where any employee can give the applicant the required paperwork, and any employee, any clerk in the office can process this. Once the application is completed, you have the drug screening authorization signed on. You can quickly review the application to see if that person qualifies for the position, and you can determine right then whether you want to interview them or not. If you're at the office when the candidate comes in, observing their behavior may give you an idea if this person is a good candidate or not. Remember the pot smoking guy that I spoke about earlier. If you want to interview the person, then you can set the hook, so to speak. If it takes them an hour to fill out an application that should take 5 minutes because they're drunk, that actually happened to me, then obviously you're not going to interview that person. You're going to say thank you very much, send them on their way. Now, remember that acquiring internal clients is a marketing process. You've recruited them. Now, your interview process is the first quote-unquote sales call. You're going to qualify them, and they're going to qualify you, just like in a sales process. You may or may not have met them before. The question is, what's their first impression of you? As I shared in Phenomenal Operations, people make 11 assumptions about you in the first 30 seconds of meeting you before you even open your mouth. You want them to see you as the one and only person they would work with, just like you want your prospects to feel the same way. So be sure to take these steps. Be prepared. Review the application. Have your questions ready. Don't multitask. Don't be in a hurry. This is a very important event, as it'll set the tone for the entire employment experience. Make sure that your office is neat and organized. No one that you want working for you wants to work for a slob. If you don't have an office, meet at Starbucks or someplace like that. Observe, was the candidate on time? This is probably the best that you'll ever see. How are they dressed? How are they groomed? Are there any quirks that might cost you sales? Is the person's handshake weak or too strong? You want to ask open-ended questions. In our Inner Circle training program, we have an entire interview application process with all the paperwork, all the questions. So I'm just giving you some pointers right now. Ask open-ended questions. Avoid yes and no questions unless you're just confirming information. Let them talk. One of the biggest mistakes in interviewing and in sales is talking too much. Listen, listen, listen. Listen to the person's responses and pay attention to whether he or she is making eye contact or not. Ask yourself, is this person confident? Are they too confident? Are they cocky? And there are many questions that you want to ask. There's many programs and books that you can buy to learn more about the interview process. But here's a few things that you can use as basic questions. By the way, I'd highly recommend that you get some of Dave Anderson's books, like Up Your Business. The guy is an amazing leader. And again, we've got full interview scripts in our Inner Circle training program. Start with, how are you today? Did they give you a positive response? Tell me a little bit about yourself. I see that you're applying for this position. Let them talk. Maybe they'll tell you why they're interested in that or what they see in that position. I see that you were working at wherever it was before. What did you like about your previous job? What didn't you like? By the way, why do you want to work here? Here's a great question. Why should I hire you over someone else? By the way, do you have reliable transportation? It's illegal to ask if they own a car, so you ask if they have reliable transportation. If they're relying on their brother-in-law to get them to work, they probably don't have reliable transportation. Do you have a valid driver's license? Do you have a clean driving record? Of course, those are going to be important for anyone in a service situation where they're driving a company vehicle. Now, if you feel that you want to hire this person, share that opportunity with them and begin by effectively communicating your vision. Talk about the mission. Talk about your values. Talk about the purpose. One of the things I do is let the person know that there's a simple two-part agreement that's important for us to work together. Part one is that we care about your dreams and goals. And that's one of the first questions that I ask people when they come to work for us. Here's what I say. Other companies may treat you like a number and devalue you as a human resource, but we care about you as a person. We want to put you on a track to reach your goals and dreams, and we've created a system where you can grow and you can develop. Part two is this. We can't provide that without reaching the company goals. The company has goals, it has a vision, and we have systems that we operate by. When you help us implement those systems and fulfill the vision, we can then help you reach your goals and dreams. Otherwise, we can't. Does that make sense? Now, we typically do several interviews depending on what the job is. Typically in my company, my team will interview them, and then I will do the final interview or more. Sometimes they might have to interview six times. Dave Ramsey's company has them go through several interviews. Hire slowly. That way you get the right person. You got to make sure that you get the right person. If you decide that you want to hire them, at this point you can go over their pay plan, their benefits, work hours, job description, anything else that that person would need to know to make that decision. Again, you may want to do additional interviews or get your team involved in the interview process before you make the hire. They will see things that you don't see. The next thing is what I call phenomenal orientation. Orientation is a very important process for a successful employment experience. Think about how a brand new employee feels when they join a brand new team. Your job as a leader is to make sure that that new hire comes aboard successfully. All of your staff should be trained on how to treat one another, and someone should have the responsibility of sharing the company culture with that new person. Since leadership is effectively communicating your vision, your mission, your values and purpose, your MVP, and the most powerful factor in an organization is its culture, this needs to start on day one of employment. If this is not specifically and strategically managed, you'll end up with a different culture from the one that you want. A specific orientation process designed to introduce a new hire into the culture and to share the MVP is key. The time frame will vary depending on what kind of business you have, but a full day would be ideal as a start. And if you're the positive, enthusiastic leader you should be, it'd be phenomenal if you did it, at least until you get your entire team so steeped in your culture that they don't know any other way and that they know how to do it. I know that this can sound like a huge burden, but other than getting money in the front door, there's nothing more important. In fact, if you don't get your team right, they can ultimately determine how much money comes in and how much goes out. So schedule the orientation. When I got my first business turnkey, this was the very last thing I gave up. In fact, orientation for my part ended up being just having them with me to go to lunch so that they could hear my heart, so that they could hear me share the MVP, to share the vision. And I probably did the last interview or two, and now I've trained my team to do the orientation. So if you can't do it, then at least take the time to train and model to have someone else do it. Do not just let any employee do this important task. Even a good employee can say something wrong. It might be an innocent gesture that was said out of nervousness, but this is the first impression of working at your company. It should be outstanding. The idea is that if the person is officially welcome to the team and they have the right experience, they're going to feel the love of the community. Now, let me just give you a sample outline of what could be included in orientation day. First would be a welcome to the team if you have daily production meetings or if the person starts on your weekly staff meeting day. Introduce the person in front of the group. Otherwise, walk him or her around and introduce that new hire to each person individually. Say something nice about each team member that you introduce them to. This causes your new employee to look up to that person and value them at a high level. If your team member doesn't deserve that, they shouldn't be there. You've got to find something positive to say about your team member in front of this new hire. This also gives your new hire a great feeling as she observes the positive enthusiasm. Go over the MVP. Go over the vision. This includes everything that we talked about. One of the things that I did to become turnkey was to record a video that outlines our vision, our mission, values, and purpose, as well as an orientation on our basic processes. This was helpful for them to see the equipment and processes before they actually handled them. And now my operations director runs that DVD, so they get a little bit more exposure to me, even though I don't work in the company. The next thing that you want to do is share the organizational chart. This shows the new hire, how the team fits together, and it shows the importance of every role. The following items may have been covered in the interview process, but they need to be reviewed again on orientation day. You want to make sure that there are no miscommunications early on. So you're going to go over your PRD again. That's your performance results description. Make sure the person understands what they'll be responsible for, even though they may not know how yet. Review the pay plan in writing. Review the benefits in writing. Review the work hours in writing. Then you're going to issue any uniforms or tools or supplies and get that person situated with their phone, their computer, those kinds of things. We're going to review the dress code policy, and then you're going to issue and go over the employee handbook. You want to be very clear about the basic on-time policies, compensation policies, social media policies, etc. Go over your safety guidelines, if there are any. And one of the things that we do is we have our new hires sign off that they have received that manual and that they have read that employee handbook. We also give a 90-day probationary period. You'll want to check with your labor attorney about anything that you do in this section. And this is not legal advice, but a probationary period will be the best performance that you'll probably ever see until you develop them. Are they on time? Do they have a good attitude? Are they catching on? Are they learning? They do not become, in my company, a regular employee until after that probationary period, at which time we can both sit down and decide if this is going to be a good fit. The next part is training. Training is the key to developing good habits, instilling confidence, and preparing people to grow to the next level. Most small business owners don't train their staff properly. There are many reasons. Yours may include being too busy working in the business to do it yourself. You don't have someone qualified on the team to do it. It's expensive. And worse, if you've invested a lot of money and time into someone and they march straight to the competition for better pay, you probably have a bad taste in your mouth. Again, remember that if you think it's expensive and painful to train people only to have them leave you, remember Zig Ziglar's quote once again. Is it better to train them and lose them or not train them and keep them? I think we know the answer to that. Get the negative emotion off the playing field on this one. Understand that training is the key. not only the technical training they need to do their job, but training on customer service and personal development is the key. In fact, character training is the most important training of all. If we have character, everything else will follow. We'll do right by others and we'll want to better ourselves. I've found that the key to long-term productive team members is help them reach their goals. Help them reach their personal and professional goals. We have a dream board. We use a variety of materials from Ziegler Legacy certification training to train our staff on personal development. We use my materials to train them on customer service and sales and marketing. And of course, you want to have in-house training programs for your technical work. You can bring in outside trainers in your industry and take your team to training events, as we talked about earlier. If there's a program complete enough in your industry with step-by-step manuals, you may be able to bypass the entire process of writing procedures in certain areas of your business. For example, in my service company, we have an outside group that developed training curriculum in a specific area with a manual that goes with it. That department goes to Dallas twice a year, and we use their manual as our procedures. Many times an outside training program will have the procedures that you don't need or won't be robust enough, but you can use them as your template and build on them, of course, with permission, without copying something that is not legally yours. When you can utilize programs that are already done, you can save yourself a lot of time. When training someone, there's an old saying that goes like this. Tell them what you're going to tell them, and then tell them what you told them. So that can be used in training, all right? Tell them what you're going to teach them, and then tell them what you taught them. Here's another one. Training is all about repetition and creating habits out of learning, by the way. I love this simple training principle. Tell, show, watch. In other words, tell them what to do. Show them how to do it, and then watch them do it until they're doing it consistently. This is where most small business owners and most trainers fail. They don't invest enough time actually letting the trainee do the process. See, tell is what's called the cognitive learning domain. For this, you need a teacher. It's all about information. If you're learning to fly an airplane, there's going to be some classroom or video time or time reading a manual, which is important because you need to know the information. Now, show is what we call the psychomotor learning domain. For this, you need an instructor. It's all about building skill. You aren't going to really learn to fly just with information. You need to develop a skill. And you do that with an instructor, someone watching you and showing you. And then, speaking of watch, this is called the affective learning domain. For this, you need to create experiences. This is about the trainee getting experience. You aren't going to be a phenomenal pilot without experience. Once your trainee has the skill you need to allow him or her to get the experience in a controlled environment, of course, this is where the right habits and character will truly be built. Watch them do it until you know that they can do it consistently. Then you can release them to go and do the work. Let me talk to you about the KISS principle, and I'm not talking about the rock band, but wearing makeup and getting into character is a phenomenal way to teach. But KISS stands for Keep It Simple, Sam. You thought I was going to offend you, didn't you? Avoid giving too much information at one time. The human mind can only absorb a certain amount of information in one period. The more important thing is to practice the new information. Remember that training is about building habits. When we train someone on a new process, we break it down into bite-sized chunks. For example, in my service company, when we hire a new service person, he or she starts with the orientation, which gives them the vision, the MVP, and the basic policies. To help the person learn the procedures, we break it down to one procedure per day. Then each day, we refer to the previous procedure from the previous day, and each day we add one to it. Think of baking a cake. We start by understanding what kind of cake we're baking. We have a picture of what that cake should look and taste like. We know what flavor it is. This is your MVP. Now we get out all the ingredients for making a successful cake. These are our values and our basic policies that ensure that we live out those values and develop the culture we want. In fact, a great pastry begins with the right culture. How do you like that? Then we have the steps of actually creating the cake. These are our procedures. Here's how long you bake the cake, how long it has to cool, and why. How to mix the frosting. The procedures are the how. Remember to connect the procedures to the why, which is the purpose. Once you've baked a cake in the presence of a trainer, you can now bake a cake successfully on your own. The more experience you get at baking cakes and baking different cakes, the more it's going to help you become a phenomenal cake baker. As a trainer, give constant feedback. Don't let the cake burn in the oven because you don't want to micromanage or you want to teach them a lesson. Don't allow too much time in between practice. Remember that repetition is the mother of learning. It's been said that within 30 days, people forget 90% of what they've learned unless it's repeatedly reinforced. If you have a trainee who isn't catching on, you must determine whether it's an attitude or aptitude issue. Is the person the right fit for the position? Is your company suited for them? Did you make a bad hire? Do they have the right DISC profile? Or do you just need to do more training? I'll get into coaching in just a minute and show you how to determine whether it's an attitude or an aptitude issue. Once people are trained, sometimes you're going to need to delegate something that's outside of your team members' job description or PRD. There are some principles and steps that I think that will help you in delegating. First, be clear about the outcome. This is what the cake looks like. This is what it's going to smell like. This is what it's going to taste like. Keep the different communication styles in mind. Be sure to over-communicate when delegating. And remember the reason that you're delegating. The reason you're delegating a task is so that you can multiply your output, which frees you up to do other important things to reach the vision. You want the person to take full ownership of the task. You are there to guide and coach, but if you have to micromanage it, there isn't a reason to delegate it. An unpopular but very effective technique that I use is called benign neglect. In other words, you intentionally become unavailable at times. This trains your staff not to rely on you for every single thing that they need. Now, you certainly wouldn't do this if they didn't have what they needed in the way of procedures, tools, and support and training. And someone does need to be in charge in case of an emergency or a breakdown in systems. That doesn't always have to be you. You can also set it up that only a certain person knows how to contact you and get to you. Another mistake in delegating is what's called buying it back. In other words, you give your employee a task that he or she finds difficult. The mistake that many managers make is that they take it back and say, well, I'll just handle it myself. Even though there may be times that this is appropriate, don't make that a habit because it teaches your employee that if it's hard, they can just give it back to you. Rather, it's very healthy to help them work through a difficult task, and they'll eventually adopt that value system in the future. When they have difficulty, ask them this question: what are you going to do about that? At first, they might say, me? Then you explain why you want them to work on it instead of you, and that you know that they can do it. There are also cases in which your team member that you delegate to don't really understand what it is that you want. In this case, you need to rephrase, refocus your instructions in different ways for different communication styles so that they understand. This is a natural process due to the different ways that we communicate and the different personalities. Don't feel that something's wrong if you have to do this sometimes. Daily or weekly reporting and checklists are great ways to keep everyone on track. I meet with my team once a week to make sure that our projects are moving forward. And of course, we have a daily huddle at Phenomenal Products. You may want to keep a running list on a Word document or a notes file, or you may want to use Trello or Evernote or something like that to manage what you're delegating and manage projects. Be sure that you're using a job description or a PRD. Make sure that you have some sort of follow-up system to make sure that things don't get lost in a black hole. Having a follow-up system to recap progress also helps you from overloading your employees. Between their job description, which might have a checklist of daily duties, and their to-do list, you can get a clear picture of their load. Now, the goal of Phenomenal Leadership Systems is to develop a community that has completely bought into your vision, your mission, values, and purpose. They know their position, and they know exactly what to do every day. But the reality is that human beings will miss the mark for one reason or another, and most leaders, managers, and supervisors don't know how to handle it in a responsible, positive manner. All team members, including you, have developed their own ways of solving conflicts over a lifetime. We must teach them our protocol for communicating, and it's especially important when dealing with them about performance or attitude issues. Remember, always discipline in private. I've made the mistake of bringing something negative up publicly many times, and in 32 years, it has never worked out right. Even if I don't mention a name, there's a negative reaction that decreases performance instead of increasing it. When you're coaching someone, it's always about the vision. It's always about the MVP. Always. Keep your focus on the performance as it relates to those things. In the event of theft, lying, sexual harassment, drug or alcohol abuse at work, and things of that nature, they're immediately released. So coaching doesn't apply in those cases. But in your coaching session, what you want to do is bring them into your office or meet somewhere privately, and your goal is to determine the difference between the desired performance and the actual performance by asking questions. Just like in sales, asking questions is the very best way to get people to own something. In this situation, you're selling ideas and concepts, and you want them to own their behavior. So the selling process is the same. Ask good questions. Ask questions like these. Joe, can you tell me about whatever the situation is? Now, this brings attention to the issue without judgment. There may be things that you're unaware of. I've made assumptions in the past that were incorrect. I've judged people before they even had an opportunity to explain. And once I knew the actual circumstances, it turned out that they didn't do anything wrong. But let's say that something that didn't get done, that was supposed to get done by them, didn't happen. Joe, do you understand that this is your responsibility? Do you know how to do it? Do you have the resources that you need to accomplish it? Do you have the time to do it? Now, many times people will use time as the excuse. So what you can do is go back to the training process and go over how they're using their time to determine whether this is a legitimate issue or not. Sometimes it's a systems issue. If the system has been changed, or the workflow or the workload has changed since the system was developed, a systems change might be needed. There may be issues with the systems or things that others are doing that are affecting the outcome, and as a leader, as the coach, I need to know that. In your coaching session, you want to determine whether it's an attitude issue or an aptitude issue. Once I've covered the questions about knowing their job and having the time and resources to do it, and I've considered whether I have the wrong behavior style or the right communication style, the right disc profile in that position, I need to explore whether or not the person is having an attitude challenge. So I might say something like, "Hey, is everything okay?" Sometimes there are personal issues at home or with a relationship that gets in the way of work. Sometimes people develop addictions or have financial problems. Hopefully these will surface before you have to get in a disciplinary situation because you're really always coaching and leading, but sometimes they don't surface until later on, usually because the supervisor isn't paying enough attention to pick up on that situation. Since I'm a turnkey business owner, I rely on my directors to warn me if something's amiss or something's veering in the wrong direction. After you coach someone, get their agreement to change. Once I've covered these things, I'll ask a final question, and that is this: are you willing to get this done in the way it's supposed to be done? If the response is in the positive, I shake that person's hand, I look them in the eye, and I say, "Great, I'm counting on you." By the way, eye contact and handshake is very important because that person is giving you his or her word to change. And your words of expectation should be positive. Avoid the urge to say something degrading. That tendency shows that you don't value them at the level that you should. If we have to visit the issue again or other issues come up, we go into a formal disciplinary process that ends up with the person being restored, quitting, or being released. Once you enter into a formal disciplinary process, you want to have a witness. You should record everything in writing. And please note that none of what is written in this book is legal advice and shouldn't be construed as such. Please consult an attorney before using any disciplinary principles talked about in this book. At this point, we either have a serious aptitude issue and they need training, or they need to be moved to another area, or we have an attitude issue. If you have exhausted all of the issues and you feel that they just don't want to do the work for some reason, or their personal distractions have come to an unmanageable place, then you'll need to address it. Question I like to ask is this: Joe, are we still the right fit for you? In other words, don't tell the person that you don't think he or she is the right fit. If you're requiring a high level of commitment and work and attitude, they may not be up to it. It may not be the right fit for them anymore. And that's okay, because you've developed a phenomenal leadership system that consistently attracts and keeps the very best staff members. There's no room for those who aren't ready to play at that level. I want to talk to you now about the value of daily coaching and mentoring. People are creatures of habit. We love routine. As human beings, we hate change. Your employees develop work habits, and they develop them quickly. Before too long, they're in a routine, and sometimes it's the wrong routine. When we hire people, we prefer them with no experience. The reason is that they've built habits that won't change. The key is to get your employees started off the right way and to coach and mentor them daily. If there's a change of procedure, then you must not only tell them and show them, but you must also inspect them on a daily basis. Expect only what you inspect is very true. If you're not watching what's going on, people seem to drift. If you drift just a little bit over a long period of time, it won't even look like the original procedure. It's like a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy. The most recent copy doesn't look anything like the master because it wasn't a copy of the master. It was a copy of a copy that had developed some imperfections. If you draw a straight line all the way across a chalkboard and then another one just above it and point the line only a couple of degrees north, the end of the line will be a long way from the end of that straight line. It starts out only a couple of degrees off, but the farther you take the line, the farther off it is. It's the same with your employees. If they get off track just a little bit, over time, the effect can be huge. A bad habit is like a bad golf swing or the improper swing of a baseball bat. If you continue to use that swing, you'll form a habit that's hard to break. Here's the scary part. If you're having fair success with that bad swing, with that wrong swing, you'll be hesitant to change. Why? One reason is that it's uncomfortable. But another reason is the fear of loss. What if I change my swing and I do worse? The fear of loss is one of the most powerful human motivators known. Hey, it's working. Why change it? In the case of an employee doing something the wrong way, even when we point out that we're losing money or emotional equity with our clients, which is your brand, unless it's hurting their pocketbook or hurting them in some way, they may not have the motivation to change. They'll be uncomfortable doing it a different way. So the way to change that mindset is through daily coaching and mentoring, sharing the vision, sharing the mission, sharing the values. Most importantly, sharing the purpose, the why we do what we do, talking about how we're making a difference in people's lives. Go over the procedure again and again and again. Drill. And of course, you need to have written procedures, and you must have already shown them how to do it and watched them do it. After that, you have to reinforce that habit daily. As I mentioned before, within 30 days, people forget 90% of what they've learned unless it's repeatedly reinforced. 90%? Wow. It has to be repeatedly reinforced. I want to remind you of something that I taught in my Seven Secrets of a Phenomenal Life book. Every person has a filtering process when they're presented with a new idea that requests change on their part. These are stages that people go through. They're levels that people go through. They filter the idea through their bank of experiences and values. In fact, I wrote a whole book on it called Think and Be Phenomenal, The Five Levels of Being Phenomenal. This is not something that's intentionally done. It's a subconscious process, the filtering, that manifests an action or inaction. In other words, we do what we value deep down, regardless of what we say. We might say that we want to lose weight, but we take contrary action, such as eating a bowl of ice cream right before we go to sleep. Why? If we really wanted to lose weight, we wouldn't eat the ice cream, right? The truth is that our subconscious value system wants something that takes precedent for the moment. It's a more urgent need. It is desperate to be filled. The problem is we don't even know what the real emotional need is because it's buried and we may never dig it up, so we eat the ice cream. Now imagine if your personal trainer was sitting in your den with you. When you're tempted to eat ice cream, the trainer reminds you of the real truth. The truth is you don't really need ice cream. It's an emotional need that can't be fulfilled with ice cream anyway. In fact, you're going to feel worse after eating the ice cream. Tomorrow morning, you're going to feel badly if you eat the ice cream. It's going to affect your performance in the other areas. So your coach, your mentor, your personal trainer helped you stay on track. So you drink a large glass of water instead. Now, obviously, you can't be with your employee every moment of the day, but we, as leaders or someone, can be in constant touch so that there's enough interaction to keep people on track. Now, remember, this will not happen only by telling people what to do in meetings. We have to help them change habits. In order to do that, you have to sit in the den once in a while when that temptation to get ice cream occurs. Now, the six steps in the filtering process and the levels that I talk about in my book, Think and Be Phenomenal, go like this. The first filter is we're unaware. We just aren't aware that the concept or the idea, the skill is important. Number two is awareness. You become aware that it's important, but you haven't come to a place where you're willing to change. Number three is being willing to change. Now you're willing, but you don't have the support or the willpower or the focus to make it happen. If you get past that and you get to controlled attention, which is intense focus, now you can start getting somewhere. Most of the time you do it right. Most nights you don't eat ice cream. But if you have a bad day, you might break down. If we get through that process and get more consistent, we move into the level that I call commitment. This is the minimum level where you want all of your team members. At this level, you get consistency. It has to be an unusual situation where they'll deviate. You would have had to have a monster of a day to give into that ice cream in that example. And then finally is six, which is characterization, and this is the ultimate level. At this level, you wouldn't eat ice cream if someone had a gun to your head. You've come to a place where the value of health dramatically overrides your physical and emotional cravings. In fact, because you thoroughly train yourself, the old habit has been replaced with a new habit of drinking a large glass of water. Now, here's the point. The point is understanding that everyone goes through this filtering process to build habits is important to you as a coach. And daily coaching and mentoring will help your team build the right habits. Now, if you haven't been able to turn things around with coaching, it's time to begin the disciplinary process. Please understand that the goal of this process is to restore the person to performance. It's also important to have a paper trail in the file at this point. Refer to a labor attorney as it relates to all of these things. This is not legal advice. Sit down with your employee with a witness. You need to have a formal document that describes the desired performance as it's outlined in the job description and the policies and procedures. We have this in our inner circle, by the way. Make notes of what you talked about and what the employee has agreed to. The document states that if you have to revisit a lack of performance within a specific period of time, that person will be given a decision-making leave. Decision-making leave is the opportunity for the person to take leave from work for one day, with pay, by the way, to decide whether to comply with the policies and procedures of the company or to quit. My goal is to help that person quit if they're not the right team member rather than to release him or her. I want it to be their decision. I will coach them out of the company if they're not the right fit, if we're not the right fit for them, better said. If you maintain your phenomenal leadership systems properly, you won't even have to get into this process. It'll be a mutual agreement for the person to move on. But there are occasions when you've allowed people to stray, or they refuse to grow, or they make poor judgment calls, and you have to release them. If he or she doesn't return to acceptable performance standards, you give that person leave with pay to make a decision whether your company is a good fit or not. It's okay if you aren't a good fit for that person. A phenomenally successful company isn't for everyone. It takes a phenomenal attitude, hard work, and constant learning and stretching. Everyone doesn't want to do that. Have the person take the day off and come back the next day with a decision to either comply or to quit. If the person chooses to stay, he or she has only one more chance to get it right. Now, here's how to release someone and remain best friends. This issue is probably the biggest reason small business owners don't build a team or hire people to start with. The pain, the agony, and the potential outfall of firing someone is just too much for them to imagine. And I'm telling you, it isn't easy. I've had to release people that I loved. One of my best friends, as I mentioned earlier, in the whole world is Jim Bardwell. He was my special agent for 8 years. He did practically everything in the company and eventually became my top referral marketing agent. He took that position to an entirely new level. He had the vision. He had the mission, the values, and the purpose down to a science. But after 8 years together, we both knew that it was time for him to move on. In that case, it was a mutual positive event. He's now living his dream. He's found his groove, and we've been blessed, of course. This is the best kind of outcome that you could have. The goal is for both of you to understand that the personal relationship is separate from the business relationship. It doesn't mean you don't have a personal relationship. It just means we understand that we might be best friends and can't work together. There are lots of people who work for my company that I don't have a personal relationship with, and that's okay. It's not required. They fulfill the vision, and that's what is required. I've had to release people for not performing. I've had to release people who simply did things that were wrong and they deserve to be fired. No matter what the situation, it's never fun. This is just another reason your dream has to be compelling. Because sooner or later, you're going to have to endure ugly things for your business to grow. Having systems in your business, especially good leadership systems, will help you avoid much of the heartache. And when you do have to let someone go or help them quit, it will be obvious to everyone that you did what's right. As the old saying goes, a smooth sea doesn't make a great sailor. So when it comes down to it, if you've done your coaching properly, it shouldn't be a surprise to that person if they get terminated. If that's the case and you need to terminate someone, bring that person into your office with a witness and simply say, effectively, immediately, you are terminated from your employment or released from your position. Simple as that. Nothing more. Nothing less. And that's very hard to do. Accompany the person as he or she gathers their personal belongings, or let the person know that they can come back with an appointment to get their stuff. But if you say anything more, you open up yourself to an array of potential issues. It's best to just cut it off just like that. If you do have a personal relationship outside of work, you can preface it with, my goal is that our relationship outside the company will continue to prosper, but effective immediately, I have to release you from this position. I've done this both ways, and I can tell you from experience that doing it any other way just has not worked in my experience. Anytime I've added to it, tried to justify, allowed a conversation to go on afterwards, did not work out well. I want to share with you what I believe to be the greatest leadership message ever. Across the United States, small businesses and large corporations alike struggle with the same issues: cutthroat competition that's selling below invoice, customers who don't want to pay the advertised price, employees who don't want to do what management wants them to do, customer service is non-existent, and management is frustrated because it doesn't have the resources needed due to a tight budget. Employees don't care about the company, and they don't care about the customer because they don't feel like anyone cares about them. Companies think that they can't afford the luxury of recruiting and training the right people, so mediocrity reigns. Many companies that fit this profile struggle to make a profit. The result is frustrated management team, resentful workers, and disappointed customers. While the typical business is worrying over price, cutting budgets, and desperately trying to find good people, Starbucks has loyal customers standing in line, happily paying $4 for a cup of coffee, a commodity that's been around since 1100 AD when Lee Coffee brewed the first cup in China, or when John Coffee served up the first cup in England, whichever story you want to believe. Employees over at Southwest Airlines are on a fervent mission to make sure the company achieves its vision. They love the company so much they seem like multi-level evangelists. And Nordstrom continues to build upon their legendary customer service. How have companies like this managed to rise above the mediocrity that rules in the typical company? Why is it their employees and their customers love the company? What do these companies have in common other than just being extremely profitable? Do they have something unique? Is it just great marketing? Is it great management? Is there one simple concept that can bring all of the proven strategies of a phenomenal business together? And the answer is yes, and the answer is found in a word I call community. What truly sets great companies apart is they have created community in their business. Community is a word that has many meanings for many people. We often refer to community in the context of our neighborhoods or local area. Sometimes we refer to groups of people as a community, like the Hispanic community or Asian community, for example. We talk about the global community and even a virtual community as it relates to the internet. My definition of community goes much deeper than just a group of people or a neighborhood. Community is the sense of belonging for which all human beings hunger. Every human being has a longing for belonging. We're created that way. We have a need to be connected to other people. We have a deep desire to be part of something meaningful, something that makes a difference. The longing for community is the reason that people join clubs. It also happens to be the reason people join gangs. Humans have the need to identify with a group of people who will accept them and love them, a group of people who belong to each other and walk through life with one another through victory and defeat. Our family is the first community that a person belongs to, but community as it once existed in the United States has all but vanished. The idea of having dinner as a family and being deeply involved in one another's lives, truly enjoying one another's successes and enduring one another's failures, is a challenge. The idea of giving up our own rights to serve others. We've lost the sense of community and family, and therefore it doesn't exist in our businesses, churches, and institutions for the most part. Our organizations today mirror the way we live our independent lives. Yet as we pursue our rugged independence and our individual rights, deep down, we all long to experience community as we once did. The scarier part is that many of our younger people today, your new workforce, doesn't even know what community feels like. Single parents, latchkey kids who are now adults, they have not felt true community. They haven't felt the love and encouragement that true community can bring, but they long for it. They may not even know what to call it or even how to explain it, but the feeling is definitely there. They need to be loved. They need to be accepted. They need to be recognized. They need to be part of something that means something. They have a longing for belonging. If you understand and implement the principles of building community in your business, you'll be able to do something for others that you may have never done before. Help them experience the very thing they long for, the very thing every one of your employees desperately wants and needs and will do almost anything to get. Your business can be the first place they ever truly feel connected and needed. You have the unique opportunity to give them the feeling of being a part of something bigger than themselves. Your reward for that is your employees will begin to love your company for it. They'll begin to become your biggest evangelists, which in turn creates loyal, high-paying clients that increase your profits. Keep in mind that your employees may not even know what they're looking for, but you can be assured that they will know it when they feel it. When they experience community that you foster in your company, they will respond. There'll be a few who won't, but if you do it right, it will only be a few, and that handful of people will quickly move on. Finally, chances are that you may not have experienced true community yourself. Chances are you're longing for true community and trying to fill that void with hobbies and business deals. If you don't understand an operating community yourself, I can promise you that your people won't either. If you aren't open and honest, they won't be either. If you aren't committed to the vision, they won't be either. If you talk badly about your customers, they will too. As the owner or manager, you will have to participate in community just as you expect your employees to participate. Living in community and doing what's required won't be easy. If it was, everyone would do it. The very reason that most companies are ordinary, mediocre, just getting by and complaining the whole way is because they don't understand what community is, and they won't commit to community values even when they think that they understand them. Too hard, too difficult, too much work for an intangible result. But you, on the other hand, can rise above the mediocrity. You can experience the exhilarating feeling of not only belonging to an extraordinary movement, but you'll be at the helm. You'll be recognized as the one who led the charge, the one who changes your business and changes your industry and has a profound and positive impact on many, many lives. The only way you can begin to create a positive community, one that gives you, your clients, and employees what they want, is to be transparent with one another and to begin to develop the way we do things here. Your community system includes your vision, which is your MVP, your mission, values, purpose, your goals, the policies and procedures of your culture. I've spent a lot of time in the Amish community. That's a great example. There's a certain way that they do things, certain values they have. You may or may not agree with them, but it doesn't matter. What matters is that you create a compelling vision for your company and begin to craft the values you want to live out. Each step that's created in marketing, sales, and operations of your business must carefully be crafted from the vision and values of your company. Is it easy? No. But if you don't do it, someone else will define your community experience for you, and that usually doesn't work out very well.